page 58, Dream, by Patricia LaFrance Wolf. No, this is not an article about sleeping, but rather the name of a personal strategy based on the story of how I have managed and sometimes mismanaged 64 years of diabetes. First, I'll begin with a short patient history, and then I'll explain my dream. When I was 22 months old, my mother thought I had a bladder infection since I was constantly drinking and persistently urinating, even though I was already potty trained. As she was 8 months pregnant at the time, she went to the obstetrician for a checkup and also asked about my problem. Fortunately, the doctor recognized the symptoms of diabetes and confirmed this with a urine test, which was the only diabetes test available in 1944. My father was in the military, and we were stationed in Augusta, Georgia. This doctor said that we should immediately return to our hometown of Cleveland, Ohio, which had a better hospital. Not knowing what diabetes was, my mother gave me a Coke during the trip since I was thirsty. I was in a coma when we arrived in Cleveland on the train the next day. After a week at Cleveland Clinic, and just before my sister was born, my mother had a 2-year-old diabetic running away from her every morning while she learned to give me insulin shots. Life progressed, and I grew up without meeting another diabetic child until I was about 8 years old. This young boy and I would sneak candy to each other, even though our parents were very strict about not having candy in the house, because kids will do as kids do and find it somewhere. To make things worse, there were no blood glucose monitoring machines in those days. We only had very inaccurate urine tests, which were done by dropping 5 drops of urine, 10 drops of water, and a tablet into a test tube. After we watched the mixture boil and bubble, the liquid turned a color. Blue meant no sugar in the urine, and other colors represented different amounts of sugar in the urine, ranging from green to brown to the dreaded orange, which meant you were loaded with sugar. Finally, test strips were developed, which you could dip into a urine sample and check for color. This was just as inaccurate as the test tube apparatus, but not quite as messy. I was not yet blind, so I could read the color tests. There was nothing for the blind at that time. The only way to get an accurate reading was to have a blood test done in a lab. Can you imagine how frequent blood draws affected a small child? My mother used to bribe me with sugary rainbow sherbet if I didn't have a screaming fit during the test. Like other diabetics at the time, I injected insulin from a glass syringe, which we boiled to sterilize. It had thick needles that I had to sharpen, and there were only 2 types of insulin available. Page 59. I went to nursing school in 1960. As an immature 17-year-old, I once really blew the diet and ended in the hospital with severely high blood sugar. But I took better care of myself as I matured, got married, and wanted children. I was so strict with my diet while pregnant that I gained only what my babies weighed. This was 7 pounds for my son and 5.5 pounds with my daughter. In contrast, uncontrolled diabetic mothers often have extremely large babies with complications. I worked part-time, belonged to several organizations, and did a lot of cooking and entertaining and keeping busy, so my weight stayed stable and I did not have any diabetic-related problems until I was 34. One day while driving, I started seeing big black spots. I went to the doctor, who immediately sent me to an ophthalmologist. He diagnosed prolific diabetic retinopathy and started laser treatments, but my retinas detached, and by 1977, I was blind. My kids were 8 and 10 years old then. It took a lot of adjusting, and the Akron office of the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation started helping me. I had an associate's degree and was back in school working towards a bachelor's degree in nursing when the department informed me that I could no longer be a nurse. But I was determined to get a full bachelor's degree, and it was quite a struggle, as I was going through several eye surgeries, learning cane mobility, and taking a few courses at the University of Akron. Then the family moved to California to get away from the terrible winter weather in Ohio. In fact, the first year that I was blind, there was an awful winter in which I was literally trapped in the house without mobility skills or transportation. I never regretted the move to California. Page 60. Finally, by the early 1980s, electronic blood glucose monitors were developed, and some were quickly made audible for the blind. However, these took several minutes to work and were not always reliable. Disposable syringes and better types of insulin made it easier to keep the diabetes under control. By this time, doctors also began to prescribe multiple insulin doses rather than one or two per day. I now use an insulin pump which continuously delivers insulin and allows me to set doses after eating. The pump, along with carbohydrate counting, has been a tremendous help in keeping the blood sugar steady. Also, the newest talking glucose meters are both small and take only seconds to do a test. I continued with school and graduated with a master's degree in education and a certificate in counseling in the mid-1980s. Meanwhile, my rehabilitation counselor introduced me to the California Council of the Blind, and the CCB convinced me that I could work again. Up to that time, my rehabilitation counselor was the only other working blind person that I knew. In the meantime, I was constantly fighting to keep the diabetes under control, as I was determined to see my two children grow up. The doctors had told my mother I would probably not live to be 30, but I had made it well past that point and determined to just keep going. I finally got a job as a counselor in a locked psychiatric facility in Pomona and became completely independent as a blind person, so independent that I moved out on my own after getting a job as a rehabilitation counselor with the California Department of Rehabilitation in Covina. I walked for miles just grocery shopping and around my neighborhood. But despite all this, after many decades, the diabetes did what diabetes does. It gave me blocked up arteries. I had my first guide dog, and the dog's fast pace gave me chest pains. I kept denying it was my heart, but it was undeniable. I ended up having quadruple bypass surgery in 1990. Complications from the surgery laid me low for months, but I recovered through sheer stubbornness and refusing to give up. After finding an excellent endocrinologist in Pasadena, I developed an acronym for managing diabetes, DREAM. The letter D is for diet, R for responsibility, E for education, exercise, A for attitude, and M for medication. Page 61. Responsibility, however, is the most important point. It means doing the responsible things that all diabetics must do. Following a diet, seeing the doctor regularly, getting the necessary blood work done, exercising, and following the required medication routine. No, it is not easy. No, it is not fun. And yes, it is frustrating, and the complications of diabetes are difficult to deal with 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and 365 days a year. But in order to keep on living a fulfilling life with wonderful friends and family, I, like so many other diabetics, just keep at it. I encourage all diabetics, type 1 and 2, to follow a regimen that keeps their blood sugars under control. There are a lot of people who need you. Education is also important and easier than ever. Today, there are several listservs and a large number of websites for diabetics. Listservs supply you with emails filled with information, often more than your doctor provides, and websites contain even more facts and experiences. Education is one of the keys to maintaining control over diabetes. If anyone has any questions about diabetes, you can contact me and I can refer you to some sources. You can find me at plawolf@earthlink.net or 626-279-2954.